Hi there, Doctor. How are you?
Oh, I'm really good for a Monday morning. This is
tell
the day typically
you
lose a little sleep.
Oh, tell everybody who you are, where you are, and I know you're here to tell us all about being sleepless.
Well, hopefully how to reduce sleeplessness and become more sleep efficient. I'm from Houston, Texas. I am senior physician of the Neurology and Sleep Medicine Consultants here in Houston. I've been doing sleep medicine now for 35 years, and I see all kinds of sleep disorders, from people with insomnia to obstructive sleep apnea to people who fall asleep at inappropriate times and places, something like narcolepsy. And we treat patients with behavioral techniques. We treat patients with medications when indicated. We treat patients with sleep machines. So we run the gamut of ways to help people.
Well, and I understand that we have been in the midst of Sleep Awareness Month. So I, you know what, it's so funny because there are people here, I work with a lot of different people in this building, and some of the younger ones, they really are having a hard time sleeping. And I'm like, well, what are you doing before you go to bed? Well, I'm on the computer. I think that might be part of it. What do you think?
You hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
March is Sleep Awareness Month because in March we lose an hour of sleep when we go into daylight savings time. And that really brings it home to people that losing just 1 hour of sleep is enough to discombobulate a great number of the population, particularly if you had trouble sleeping even before the time change. And you hit it perfectly. When you're on your computer, your iPad, your iPhone, and that light is hitting your eyes at 10, 11, midnight, 1 or 2 in the morning, you're actually suppressing the brain's ability to sleep, because darkness causes a very specific hormone in the brain called melatonin to be secreted. And melatonin stabilizes our sleep mechanism. So when you shut down melatonin production by the application of light, you're making it more difficult for you to sleep. So people who spend lots of hours at night using bright light devices like computers, etc., they're making their lives much, much more difficult. And if you add to that the fact that society has removed an hour from your sleep, well, then you're going to be doing much, much worse.
Well, I tell you what, Doctor, you know, when we fall back and we gain an hour, I'm great, but this spring forward one always gets me messed up. Always.
No
question.
And
I'm still not right.
You know, the best analogy is people who travel across multiple time zones. It's always easier to travel west because you can always make yourself stay up a little bit later. But when you travel east, falling asleep at what would be your time when you would be awake is very difficult because you can't make yourself sleep if you're not ready. And that's what that daylight savings time day does. So it requires perhaps 1 or 2 or 3 days to acclimate to that time change.
Well, how much sleep do we need?
Well, as we age, we need different amounts of sleep. Babies, as you well know, need 20 hours of sleep, newborns. Then as that baby gets to be 6 months old, it's about 12 hours of sleep, 12 hours of being awake. Teenagers need probably around 9 or 10 hours of sleep. The average adult should get between 7 and 7.5 hours per night. The problem is that if you look at large numbers of people across the world, not just the United States, but in all the advanced and technologically driven countries, we are cutting ourselves down to 5.5 to 6 hours of sleep, and that's not good.
That's not good because that just makes us unhealthy people, doesn't it?
That's absolutely right. And some of the fascinating new studies have shown that people who have fragmented or too little sleep at night are at greater risk of developing long-term illnesses like Alzheimer's, different kinds of dementia, stroke. Even cancers have been implicated in people who work night shifts with fragmented sleep. So we are doing lots of things to our bodies that we shouldn't be doing.
Now, what about caffeine and alcohol? How does that affect sleep?
Well, let's take alcohol. Lots of people use alcohol because it's a very nice calming agent. The problem is alcohol should never be used as a sleeping aid.
Right.
Because alcohol has some very unique properties to it. Number one, it causes alterations in how we sleep, and that's called sleep architecture. And it depresses our dream sleep until such time as the alcohol has been metabolized out of our body, and then all of a sudden, dream sleep rebounds. So you get an increase in dreaming, and very often those dreams are nightmares. Secondly, when alcohol is being metabolized, it forms a stimulant. So 3 to 4 hours after you have your last alcoholic beverage, you now have a stimulant on board. So let's say you've had several drinks to let you fall asleep at about 11 o'clock at night. Well, 4 hours later is going to put you at 3 in the morning, and all of a sudden you're going to wake up, your eyes are going to go up like window shades, and you're not going to be able to close them because you've got the equivalent of 2 Red Bulls circulating in your blood, and that doesn't do very much for nice, peaceful, restful sleep. So alcohol is a no-no. Caffeine in the morning to get you going, I have no problem with that. But you really need to stop caffeine around 6 or 7 o'clock at night, because then that caffeine can hang around and cause you to have difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep. And again, it adds to the disruption, and it adds to the fact that you're not going to be able to get into the good deep sleep that you need.
Well, I'm guilty of this next thing of trying to catch up on sleep on the weekend. It doesn't really help, right?
It depends how much sleep you're looking to catch up on.
Okay.
Sleep debt is like a bank. You can take out money from the bank, and before long, if you're not too good at it, you're down to nothing. And then you can't put that money back because you owe too much to too many people. But let's say you take out 3 or 4 hours of sleep for special occasions during the week. Well, you can make up for those special occasions on weekends. But understand that when you sleep in on Saturday morning and Sunday morning, and you have to be up at a normal time on Monday, you're not going to be able to fall asleep till later than you normally would, and your sleep will be shortened. It's very, very similar to daylight savings time when you take an hour away from your sleep. And everybody knows how they feel. And Monday morning blues comes about because people have slept in over the weekend, and then come Monday morning they have to wake up and their body is just not ready to do it, and they feel terrible. So that's where Monday morning blues comes from.
Well, a recent report in Best Life ranks the top 50 most sleepless cities in America. Like we were saying, Sleepless in Seattle. We're always going to say that. What a great movie. And I noticed that Richmond, where we are, is number 32 as far as sleepless cities in Virginia.
Well, I mean, it's a great city, and there are lots to do. And that's, the more things you have to do, the less sleep you're going to get. And so what it takes is a little bit of, willpower on the part of the population to say, well, we'll partake of all the great stuff Richmond has to offer, but we'll do it in moderation. And that's really the key.
Norfolk, too, which is very close to us, that's at number 29. This is such an interesting study. So let me ask you, doctor, as a doctor, and you work on this relentlessly, the sleep, how much sleep do you get?
I have, like everybody, I tell my patients, hey, I'm human. I have good nights and bad nights. If I had the cure for sleeplessness, I wouldn't be sitting here seeing patients. I'd be owning some beautiful South Pacific island. There is no magic to sleep. Yeah. There's no magic bullet. There's no magic sleeping pill. And sleep, in so many ways, is common sense. You go to sleep when you're feeling sleepy. You don't use exogenous sleeping aids like sleeping pills, either prescription or over-the-counter. You hold off alcohol and caffeine 3 to 4 hours before bedtime. You exercise in the evening and not right before bed. And these sound like just, you know, routine kinds of suggestions, but they really work. We have evolved how we sleep over millions of years. Every species sleeps. Some species sleep at night, other species sleep during the day. But we have to keep it on a routine. And when that routine is perturbed, sleep can become not only not something that is comfortable, but it can become dangerous. So we have to be able to recognize when sleep becomes a problem. And I really urge people to speak to their doctors. And if the doctor is only going to sit there and write a prescription for a sleeping pill, rather than trying to find out what the sleep issue is, ask them for a referral to a board-certified sleep doctor. Because many times those sleeping pills that the doctor who thinks that they're just being helpful is going to do more harm than good. So ask to be seen by a sleep doc who can get to the bottom of the sleep complaint and in many ways make your life much more manageable and happy and healthy.
All right. Well, I thank you very much. How can we follow you and find out more about your study and what you're doing?
Well, I'm on the web. We're at neurologyandsleep.com. We're in Houston, Texas, and we are doing lots of different clinical research trials. So come to our website, and if you see a clinical trial that catches your interest and may be part of what you're experiencing, give us a call.
I thank you very much, and here's to a good night's sleep.
And pleasant and sweet dreams.
Thank you so much.